time to bring in a college basketball legend, former LSU head coach Dale Brown, joining us in the zone on the Revolution Hotline. Coach, how are you?
I'm good. Is this Justin?
Justin and Pat Bradley.
Well, I don't want to talk to Pat Bradley.
You're still better over there.
He broke my heart so dang many times. When he was just a young old freshman, I turned to one of my assistants after he'd hit numerous shows. Who is that? Where's he from? How come we didn't know about it? So, boy, afterwards, they went and scrambled, and they got the information from me. Well, we don't recruit that area. He's from Massachusetts. I said, well, we better start recruiting there. What a competitor. He broke my heart. You won't break my heart today, will you, Pat?
No, Coach. You kidding me? This is an honor to have you on.
Well, thank you. You had quite a career, and memory serves me right. Didn't you hold a three-point record for some time?
Yeah, that's right, until a young fellow named Chris Lofton broke my heart as well, Coach. So I know how it feels. But
now,
it was...
Justin, I'm going to see how close you are to Pat.
How what I am?
How close.
I'm going to see how close you are.
All right. Well, unfortunately,
I'm
about a foot away.
Can you tell me the name of his eighth grade team he played on, what they were called?
You talking about the Everett Rats?
The Everett Rats.
Oh, I know about the Everett Rats, Coach. You know this. And I'll tell you this, too. Don't kid yourself and don't get on your former assistant coaches, because the thing about Pat is Coach Williamson wasn't looking for him. He happened on him. He was out there on accident. It was a total mistake, but it worked out well.
Well, great, great program. And, you know, I've always said this. Nolan Richardson, of the many coaches, and I coached 44 years, so I've got a pretty good example of what's going on. He was the most underrated coach there was in the country. He could recruit. He was a disciplinarian. He loved kids. He was a dang good floor coach. He was tough. Their teams were disciplined. And because he was controversial, I wonder if that's why maybe he didn't get the honors he should have had from the so-called experts in the field. But he's truly one of the great coaches I've ever coached against.
Right. You almost think he kind of got excited in to try to tick people off sometimes, to have that fire keep burning in his belly.
Well, he didn't have to get excited. His teams were excited enough to tick people off.
What were some of your better memories that you had playing against Coach Richardson, or coaching against him, I should say?
Well, I love guys that are feisty competitors, and I love guys also that are not on stage. Some guys, when the cameras go on, they sort of perform for the cameras, not him. He was totally a laser beam mentality, focused in. The Arkansas players during that era, if you played harder, I don't know where you'd have to go to find a team that played harder.
Right.
And he had scrappers, such as Pat. Pat was a street fighter. Well, that was Nolan Richardson's background. And the other thing, don't ask Nolan Richardson a question unless you want the truth. He was not going to put any sugarcoat anything. So I really like him. We had a good time. We all spoke in Cabo San Lucas at a national convention for Texas Roadhouse. Nolan, myself, John Wooden, Tubby Smith, Joe Hall, and Denny Crum, and we had a delightful time. There's another side of that tough veneer he's got. He's really a good guy.
Who was the best surfer out of those coaches, Coach
Brown?
The
best surfer?
Yeah.
I can guarantee you it wasn't me. I didn't learn. I grew up in poverty in North Dakota, so in the summer I had to get a job since I was 10 years of age. And, of course, there were no pools in North Dakota out in the winter, except unless you want to go ice fishing naked.
Right.
So, I certainly wouldn't have been in on that group.
You passed on that. Dale Brown, the legendary college coach, joining us in the zone. And got a book out, Coach. It's getting rave reviews, Getting Over the Four Hurdles of Life. Tell us about the book a little bit.
Well, the book sort of, Justin and Pat, the book sort of sums up life. And this, it doesn't take a Rhodes Scholar to figure this out, or a nuclear scientist. It doesn't make any difference if you're born in Baghdad, Iraq, Bunky, Louisiana, Barstow, California, whatever. All of us are going to, if we truly want to be successful and happy, not just successful, we've got to learn to negotiate over four hurdles that are put in front of us. Now, the old axiom, oh, we're all born equal, that's totally invalid. We are all not born equal.
Mm.
And as a result, we have to learn to negotiate over the tops of four hurdles. These four hurdles, and I try to use analogies of people that, when we look at the people on the top, we think, well, they just were on the top. They got there. No. Hurdle number one we all have to get over is telling ourselves, well, I don't think I can do it. I'm just from little old Everett, Massachusetts, or Minot, North Dakota, or I'm black, I'm an immigrant, I'm too small. Or worse yet, having somebody else tell you you can't do something. Let me give you one paramount example. That I use this in the book. I was speaking to a military base right on the East German border. It was a cracked armor division. I finish speaking, I get a tap on my back, and I turn around. Here's a good-looking man, about 6'9", 250 maybe, and he stuttered, Coach Brown. He said, I'll be trying out for the team, and I can't dunk a ball, and I run up and down the court about 3-4 times, and my lower extremity is tired. Can you show me some exercise? I said, sure. So I put my bag down, came from behind the podium, maybe spent a maximum of 10 minutes with him, showing him non-resistance exercises he could use. Got back home immediately, sent him the weight training program. About 8 weeks later, on my way to practice, I just before I go across the street to the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, I get a letter from him. And the letter said, Dear Coach Brown, I did everything you told me to do, but my high school coach cut me off the team. He told me I'm too slow, I'm too clumsy, I have too big of feet, I could never be a basketball player. Why don't I think of being a goalie in soccer? What should I do? Man, it bothered me all practice. I got back, my secretary left, sat behind my desk, and I thought, now, what the heck kind of a profound statement am I going to tell a 13-year-old child that's just had his heart broken thousands of miles away? I thought, heck, that's easy. I'm going to tell him how my life was like. My father abandoned me 2 days before I was born and never returned. So I was kind of told I couldn't do it by no father in the house. So I sat down and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to outline my life to him. Dear Shaq, I'm real sorry what happened to you. But every time in my life when I failed, I was told I wouldn't amount to be anything, I had a heartbreak, had inferiority complex, didn't think I could do it, I tried the following and it worked for me. And I bet if you try it, it'll work for you. It's fairly simple. If you always sincerely try to do your very best and you never give up under any conditions, eventually God will take care of everything else. I'm not naive enough to think that letter stimulated him into greatness, but he wrote the introduction to the book, and he says, this book is destined to change the lives of many, such as it changed my life. The second hurdle we all have to face, oh boy, we think we can do it. I remember when we left North Dakota, I thought, I'm going to try to be a college coach. Now, how am I going to do it? I got no connections. I grew up on the Canadian border. Pat, when you left Everett, Massachusetts.
That's where Magic Johnson was from.
Everett Washington?
Everett, yeah. Washington.
There you go.
No, he's from Michigan.
East Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, the next hurdle we all have to get over is after we jump over I can't or don't let anybody else influence us, we can't do it, there's going to be failure. You're going to fail in your personal life. You're going to fail in your business life. There's going to be failure. So what do you do when you fail? I give examples of how to get back up from failure. Now, you can't buy, barter, lie, or cheat or con your way over these hurdles. We've got to get over them. So here's a perfect example. There's a young man, all he dreamed about is getting out of high school and being a film director. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to make movies. So the first thing he did is he went to try to get into UCLA. Twice he was rejected at UCLA Film School. Then he thought, well, I'll try USC, their second best. He tried them multiple times. He failed. He didn't get in. Now, he could have easily quit. He said, I'll try one more time. I'll try this little school that just moved from a junior college to a four-year school called Long Beach State. They let him in. That guy that failed was Steven Spielberg, maybe one of the great movie producers or directors of all time. Mm-hmm. Then the third thing that's going to happen to us. Now we get over, and the book is all designed, worked around these four hurdles. Now something's going to happen in your life. The third hurdle is handicap. What do I do when I come to this hurdle of handicap? You're diagnosed that you're ill. A loved one dies. You get fired from your job. You get on drugs. You have some form of a handicap that pulls you down. I think of one person. This guy goes in to see the doctor. He's told he's got testicular cancer, abdominal cancer, 12 tumors in his lungs and 2 in his brain. Has no chance of living. Here he is. He got over I can't. He got over afraid to fail. But now, here's this handicap. All he's loaded with cancer. He made up his mind. I will not let this happen to me. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to not fail. I'm not going to let this handicap hold me back. The guy's name went on to win 7 Tour de France's in a row, Lance Armstrong. And by the way, the Tour de France is over 2,000 miles for one race. Then the fourth and final hurdle that I described. This one most of us struggle with our whole life. It's know yourself. Who am I? Where am I going, and what do I want to do in my life? Not faking who we are. My mama used to tell me as a young boy, Dale, when we were poor and on welfare and poverty-stricken and wore clothes that smelled like mothballs from rummage sales, she'd always tell me, Dale, she'd say, don't try to make an image, she said, because if you spend too much time polishing your image, you'll eventually tarnish your character and be an unhappy man. Be true to yourself. Well, this fourth hurdle is a rascal. I was aware of it, but I really got aware of it when I asked Pistol Pete to talk to our basketball team one time. Now, Pete had a lot of trouble. He got kicked out of LSU after a scene, didn't graduate, had all kinds of personal problems. He got up in front of the team, and I didn't tell him what to talk about, but boy, did he open my eyes up. He said, I'll tell you, I've been on the cover of Sports Illustrated more than all you guys in this room will ever be on the cover. He said, I averaged 44.2 points a game. Nobody will ever break my record. I was an All-American at LSU. I signed the highest professional contract in history. He said, I had every chick chasing after me. I chased after them. I drove beautiful cars. I lived in mansions in every city I lived in. I used to have $3,000 to $4,000 in my pocket. He said, I was a heavy gambler. I drank too much. He said, guys, I had everything, everything the world said was happiness, except I was a miserable, messed up, disillusioned, frustrated, and bewildered. One night, wandering around my house, all frustrated, trying to communicate with extraterrestrial people. 4 o'clock at night, I went into a spare bedroom. I opened up a drawer and pulled out a gun. I was just going to put that gun in the roof of my mouth and commit suicide. And when he said that to the team, I thought, hold on. This is the pistol. He had everything. He had everything the world calls success. He said, I laid there so frustrated, tears in my eyes. He said, for some reason, I laid the gun on the bed, and I fell prone on that bed. Guys, I'm gonna level with you. I didn't even know if there was a God. I mocked him. I spit at him. I made fun of him. But I was ready to kill myself that night. And he said, I simply said, I don't know if you're there, God, but if you are, somehow, some way, will you touch my wretched life? Guys, he said instantly, it's hard to explain. For the first time in my life, a peace encompassed my entire body from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. He said, now, I didn't see the sun dance in the sky. The sea didn't part. But he said, I was a miserable human being until I took God into my life that night. He said, whatever you do, don't let your possessions possess you. And he walked out of the room. And finally, I end the book by talking to all of us. We're all going to fail. Oscar Wilde, the great playwright, said it pretty well. Every sinner, every saint has a past, and every sinner has a future. In 1806, the first dictionary described success as fortunate, happy, kind, and prosperous. 2012, it listed as attainment of wealth, fame, rank, and power. So the book is pretty simple. It's 150 pages, about the same size as Norman Vincent Peale's book, The Father of Positive Thinking. It's not like War and Peace, so you could be able to read it in one night.
Patty's talking to you because I want you to know that.
Oh, how about a week, Coach? Can you give me a week?
Coach, Pat hasn't read a book that was over about 13 pages since he got out of college. But you know what?
Now quick flip through.
I will say this. You know, it's interesting. I'm looking forward to reading the book because you mentioned a couple of guys in there. Shaquille had a book out recently, and we had him on, I guess,
last... Made himself very transparent. He made himself so happy.
No, it was a great book, and I got a chance to read that. And there was a book about the pistol that was very insightful a while back we got a chance to read, too. So I look forward to picking up your book and reading through
that
as well.
If anybody wants to order this book, they can get an autographed copy. They can go on AcadianHouse.com, AcadianHouse.com, all lowercase, all together. Or they can go, now these aren't autographed, but they can go to a Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or Walmart.
All right, and I guess there's a 1-800 number here, too, to call if you want to pick up a book, 1-800-850-8851. And,
well, you guys are right on it.
Hey, listen, I can read.
Now, Justin.
Yes, sir.
And Pat.
Yes.
How did you happen to wind up at Arkansas?
By the grace of God, Coach. By the grace of God.
It's a long.
Justin likes to call it Arkansan by choice, not chance. Right?
That's right. Yeah, I was an Iowan by. I'm like you, Coach. I was born a little further north, but I came here on purpose to get away from all the cold. Mm-hmm. So, but listen, we're out of time, Coach. But I definitely want to get you back on. Maybe if you got some time down the road, maybe we talk a little more basketball.
Well, I'll be at the Arkansas game, 12:30. In a short while. When is that Arkansas game? Is it?
You're talking the one down in Baton Rouge?
Yeah. What date is it? It's the 4th of February. Are you guys coming down for that?
We need to get Pat down there.
I may try to get down there. Yeah, that's.
I don't want to see Pat in the Assembly Center again.
He's really
mad. But too much. Keep him right there in Arkansas.
Coach, you got to give the kid a break. He feels terrible.
Coach, I will say that you do have some nice soft rims down there in Pete Maravich Center.
Don't rub it in.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Coach, good luck with the book. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
All right, thank you guys for the opportunity.